How's it going? And welcome to episode 88 of On The Wire, proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. Follow the pod on the Twitter at On The Wire Pod. If you're listening on a platform that allows ratings and reviews, please take a second to let us know what you think. I am Adam Howe. You can follow me on the Twitter at 80grade. That's all spelled out. And I'm once again joined by Kevin Hastings, who should be followed on the Twitter at HastingKevin. And Kevin, we were just talking about right before I hit the little record button. I've finished one draft. We finished our listener league draft. We are almost completed with our first gladiator draft, which has been a ton of fun so far. I am interested in joining now that I've done a slow version. I am thinking about joining one of the fastest finger ones with the 1 minute clocks. So we'll see if one of those times works out for me. But I'm also little less than halfway through my first DC as well. So it is, we are in the heart of draft season at Thanksgiving break.
Yeah, absolutely. Here we are, Thanksgiving Eve as we record, what's coming out Thanksgiving morning. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone. And yeah, similarly, I participated in the On The Wire Listener League draft that has completed that you mentioned. I started a draft champions draft in Arizona. We did the first 23 rounds. We'll pick that up in January, but I'm jumping in draft champions on Friday, on Black Friday. And then we got the gladiator that you said. I agree 100%. This has been a lot of fun and it's getting a lot of great publicity. Everybody seems to love these. And even people that haven't participated yet are ready to jump in. There's a lot of talk about these gladiator drafts that the NFBC is putting on, and they are a lot of fun. And I agree. I am, now that I have tried the format, I think I would like to jump in one of the live formats. It's baseball forecaster PDF day for those celebrate.
Oh, I forget.
there's so much baseball going on at the end of November. Drafts, new projections coming out. This is absolutely amazing. I posted on Twitter that I told my wife I have a lot of work to do today. As the forecaster came out, I'll be diving into that throughout the day under the guise that I'm working.
Of course. No, we're recording this podcast. That's work as far as I'm concerned as well.
Absolutely.
You got to like what you do when you actually work. And so more power to us, right? And you said it yourself. There's so much baseball going on. If you want it, if you want to be immersed in baseball, it's available regardless of what maybe your average consumer of sports might think. Plenty of baseball information to go around at Thanksgiving, at the Thanksgiving break. So if you find yourself at the Thanksgiving table and you're in the middle of a conversation that you just don't want to be a part of, just bring up baseball. More than likely, it's something everybody can get around, and you've got plenty of information that you can soak in and then regurgitate out over turkey stuffing and what have you.
Absolutely. And I forgot to bring up off-season trading, keeper and dynasty leagues. I'm working on a trade in the Highlander Dynasty League as we speak. I also, the Couch Potato Fantasy Baseball League from Abilene, Texas. We're opening trading either tonight or tomorrow morning. I'm not sure which one. Opening our off-season trading just for the holiday weekend for those of us that aren't going to pay much attention to football or just itching to dive in.
Yeah, I heard Chad and Pete talking on the Keeper Cut. Otnu trade season arbitration just ended a little while ago. And so the trade blocks have all been updated and a lot of activity there to be had as well. My home dynasty league, the ACC, not as active as I would like to see it in the off season. I've been negotiating a trade with somebody for 7 weeks. Technically, trade season starts as soon as the Major League Baseball season ends, and you can trade all the way up until our deadline in August. But it's very rare that we see a trade actually happen in the offseason. Almost, like, I would say 90% of all of our trades in that league go down in the last week of July.
Ours, we'll have a whole bunch go through right as trading opens, and then it will slack off until spring training again. Very few things will pop up in December and January.
It's tough because mine is a 12-team league. It's head-to-head. And no matter where you are or where you ended last season, everybody feels as though they can compete. because everybody's got an 0-0 record, right? Everybody thinks they can compete. So it's no one's a buyer, no one's a seller at this time of year. And it's not until for sure you're completely out of the playoff race where you're willing to give up even like Adam Wainwright or like somebody like that. And then you can give them away for pretty much nothing. But right now, Adam Wainwright is useful no matter how bad you were last year.
Yeah, I think it's the keeper leagues with limited number of keepers will be more active than dynasty leagues, because if you have a surplus, you want to start shopping them right now before the teams that need them make other deals.
Yep. Or more players come through the woodworks as people are doing more deep dives and finding, I'm like, you know what? I can wait. I can probably grab this guy later on and get as much. Yeah. You feel differently about players as you move throughout the offseason. All right, we're talking about trades, we're talking about signings. We got at least one, if not two, things to go over here before we get into the main focus of the episode, which is going to be talking about some of these free agent pitchers and where they're going to go and how we rank them based on the fact that they don't have a home yet. Before we do that though, Kevin, I got one decently big trade that happened overnight, so I'm glad to be able to talk about it first thing here today on Wednesday. As we're recording this, Hunter Renfroe finds himself with his fifth team in the last 5 years being traded from Milwaukee to the Angels for literally some junk. And I had to just get the low-hanging fruit joke out of the way. He was traded for Jansen Junk, who, if you don't remember, was traded by the Yankees to the Angels for Andrew Heaney a couple years ago. Also right-handed pitcher Elvis Pegoro. And minor league pitcher, left-handed pitcher, Adam Seminaris. Literally, from just by looking at it, names that I don't recognize except for Junk, because I saw him being traded for Andrew Heaney a couple years ago. Hunter Renfroe literally seems as though this is it's a 1-year salary dump by the Brewers, possibly to create more openings in their outfield. But let's look at this from both sides. Let's start with the Angels and Renfroe's impact on the Angels besides being a body double for Mike Trout. What does he offer in this new situation?
Home run power and going to a nice ballpark for it. He backed up the 2021 where he put up 31 home runs in 144 games by putting up 29 in 125 games for Milwaukee. And I think he'll fit nicely into the Angels lineup. The most interesting thing about me for the Angels is two things. One, the Angels must not be very confident in Joe Adell. I hate to use the phrase giving up, but they may be getting close, or at least think that he needs some more long-term development in the minor leagues. And also the same thing that keeps coming up every time they add an offensive player, Jared Walsh. What does this mean about how we don't know a lot about thoracic outlet syndrome surgery for offensive players? And I think this shows us the Angels may have some serious concerns about his availability. But I love Renfroe sliding into this lineup. Looks like probably the sixth spot, the lower end of the middle third of the order, as long as Rendon is healthy. If we see Rendon miss time, as we have over the past few seasons, Renfroe would probably move up to that five spot right in the middle of the order. I love the move. I love the move for Renfroe. It really concerns me about Jared Walsh and even Joe Adell in some deeper and dynasty leagues.
Yeah, look at roster resource. They don't even have Joe Adell on the active roster after this move. Wow. So we're looking at Hunter Renfroe playing right field, batting sixth in that lineup. Anthony Rendon, as long as he's actually able to stand, batting right behind him in the five spot. Jared Walsh playing first base right after Renfroe. So Renfroe's surrounded by injury of concerns in that lineup based on what Jason's put over on as of right now. Of course, we're talking about Thanksgiving break, November roster construction. Lots of things can change.
This is interesting, right? The Angels, they're all of a sudden pretty interesting here with some of these additions, in spite of the limitations we talked about with Gio Urshela last week. If he is indeed slated as the shortstop, the limitations to his defense there, that they have a pretty nice offensive lineup now, not just Trout and Otani and Taylor Ward up at the top, and the pitching staff they put together. I think I saw a tweet a couple weeks ago, so it's been a while. I apologize for not giving credit here, but each of these five guys slated for their starting rotation in the second half had an ERA under 3 in 2022. So all of a sudden, the Angels are looking interesting, and we'll see. they may not be done yet either.
It is interesting to see like the moves that they made already. They've already been pretty active in the early goings here, trading for Gio Urshela, trading for Hunter Renfroe. Because of all of the injury concerns that you talked about with Rendon and with Walsh, they've got guys that can move around. Like we right now, I think a lot of us expect Gio Urshela to be the starting shortstop, regardless of what we feel his ability to play shortstop on a regular basis may or may not be. But the idea that Urshela can very easily move over to third if Rendon has to move over to first base to spell Jared Walsh, with Hunter Renfroe jumping into the outfield and being able to move in, Luis Rengifo being able to play multiple positions as well. They do seem as though they are more flexible than they once were, at least when it comes to filling in these gaps that we're starting to see due to injury, due to inability, or not living up to expectations. Mickey Moniak moves to the bench here, and a lot of people are suggesting it, but I'd be surprised if Joe Adell is in the minors to start the season. It's a get off the pot type of situation at this point with him, and they don't have anything to gain by keeping him down longer. They almost got to either admit that this is a platoon situation, this is a bench role, or find somebody willing to take a chance on a more regular time and make another trade to maneuver the rest of their roster. All right, let's talk about the other side then, Kevin. Like Renfroe, like I said, fifth team, 5 years, most recently Red Sox, Milwaukee, LA. He's had the pleasure of batting in some very positive or hitter friendly ballparks, as you talked about. He's taking advantage of that, but he leaves a hole in Milwaukee. How do you see Milwaukee filling that, either that power gap or just the spot on the roster in general? Is there a move to be made, or are we just happy to see more playing time for some of the guys coming up?
I think we're going to see, at least early in the season, we're going to see Garrett Mitchell. We're going to see Esteury Ruiz in there. And I think this 3 or 4 weeks ago, Scott Chu. Oh, no, it wasn't Scott. It was Schwebby. Schwebsey that was here and talked about all the young Milwaukee outfielders. He grouped them together. One of them is probably going to break out this season, I think, or at least get an opportunity. And I think that's coming to fruition. It was a great call by him. He was calling that out with Renfroe still on the roster right now. Tyrone Taylor, is he going to get a little more run to see what he can do with consistent at bats here? And I think that's what we're looking at. I think early we're going to see quite a bit of playing time for all of these guys, and they're going to try to let it work itself out and see who's going to join Christian Yelich out in the outfield here.
Yeah, Yelich, even health aside, probably the only one that's guaranteed anything close to everyday role, regardless of Renfroe leaving or not. Yeah, Chris did a great job of kind of calling that out. He did do that before the Brewers added John Singleton to the protected roster. And John Roberts talked about that a little bit, a little surprising to see the Brewers do that. It was a sign that there was another move to be made, and here's that. Hence Renfroe being shipped off elsewhere. So I'll be curious to see the role Singleton forces himself into if he ends up being on that active roster come April, and what role, more than likely it is a DH role or spelling time at first base as well. Maybe doesn't really affect the outfield as much, but it does take up that DH opportunity for those extra at-bats. Yeah, I can totally see the Brewers not making another move and just going with what they got. We've been talking about a lot of these players for a couple of years now, between Tyrone Taylor getting more playing time. They traded for Esteury Ruiz last year from San Diego in the Josh Hader deal. And so you have to assume that is going to be a player they're going to want to get as much eyes on as possible to make sure that they feel as though they got the most bang for their buck in that trade, because he didn't really play a whole lot toward the end of last season. There wasn't really a lot of room for him, and now he'd be an interesting guy to see, especially how they utilize him in spring training.
Yeah, and there's been some talk since this Renfroe trade was announced that this may be part of a salary dump and Colton Wong may be next, and that could be opening up another spot. Maybe Keston Hira gets run at second base again. Going to be interesting to see what moves Milwaukee may or may not make. That may be their last trade, but there may be some more guys on the move, possibly, if indeed salary was a consideration here, as it usually is.
Of course. That's it's an interesting situation to keep in mind, to keep an eye on as we move through the offseason. Another situation that just developed earlier in the week, Miami had DFA'd Lewin Diaz, their once heralded, I guess, first base prospect, and he got picked up by the Pittsburgh Pirates in a small trade there. So he is added to the Pirates roster, and he's going to be probably competing with Ji-Min Choi for first base DH opportunities there. They're both the same handedness there. So what's your take here? Is Lewin Diaz actually, has he gone to a situation that he can take advantage of, or is this still somebody that strikes out way too much and doesn't hit the, it hits the ball really hard but doesn't actually hit it over the fence?
Yeah, I think a lot has to happen and go Diaz's way for him to see much playing time as the team is rostered right now, even with it being the Pirates. You mentioned Ji-Min Choi. Miguel Andujar slotted in at designated hitter at the moment. So I don't see a spot for Diaz. He is really going to have to play his way into something here, and it would be pretty difficult to see it happen. And I wouldn't expect him to be in the top half of the lineup regardless of what happens. Even if something would happen with an injury for Ji-Min Choi, I don't think Diaz is going to slide into the cleanup spot. I think they would move guys around and he's going to be near the bottom of the order. And while I think in fantasy baseball, there can be a lot of value in guys near the top of the lineup on bad teams, I'm less inclined to take the hit with the bottom of a lineup for the guys that are on bad teams.
I'm going to put you on the spot here, Kevin, because we didn't put this in here, but you're talking about taking chances on players on bad teams. We already got the Pirates roster open on our screen, so let's just stick with the Pirates. Tell me anybody from spots four down. So we're taking out O'Neill Cruz, we're taking out Brian Reynolds, and we're taking out Ke'Bryan Hayes, who are comfortably going in every draft that you could possibly go in right now. Who are you looking at that has the most intrigue here on this roster? And I'll throw out some names so our listeners can at least get an idea of who we're considering here. Between Ji-Min Choi and Lewin Diaz, we have Rodolfo Castro penciled in as their second baseman, Jack Sawinski in left field, Andujar, who you mentioned as their starting DH, Cal Mitchell in right field, and then Andy Rodriguez as their starting catcher as of right now. Do you trust any of these guys to draft them in a situation where they would actually be starting, whether it's in a corner position, middle infield position, utility, doesn't matter, but not on your bench?
I think Rodolfo Castro is the one here that I'm most interested in. If he can bring that strikeout rate down just a bit, and he actually dropped it slightly at the major league level in 278 plate appearances, as opposed to what he had done is a little over 300 plate appearances at AAA in 2022. He was down to 26.6% at the major league level. I really like to see guys get that under 25. That he was close to an 8% walk rate. That's pretty nice. Gave him real close to 300 on base percentage with 299 as opposed to his 233 batting average. So if he can bring that strikeout rate down just a bit more, the 11 home runs and 5 stolen bases in 71 games is pretty intriguing. Where we're looking at a 2010 guy, if you prorate that. I know we can't just prorate that.
I want to.
And Steamer almost does, right? Steamer, 113 games, which is only about a time and a half the number of games played. They're giving him 19 home runs and 7 stolen bases, 24.8% strikeout rate. That's what I want to see. They're bringing him down a couple more percentage points, getting him under that 25%. They are leaving him at very similar slash lines to what he had in 2022, even with that slight drop in strikeout rate. But that gets him there for our counting stats, and he needs to be in that top half or so of the lineup so that the RBIs and runs are there and we're not taking too much of a hit due to it being the Pirates.
Yeah, I'm really glad I set you up so that I crossed my fingers you were going to talk about Castro of all these guys. I was afraid you might go with Sawinski just because he put up the 19 home runs last year. So there's some intrigue there as far as the power categories, if the Pirates actually allow him to play every day, which Jason over at Rust Resource doesn't think that'll be the case at the moment. But Castro, I've got lined up in my queue in the Gladiator League. I don't mind talking about it with you because you've already filled up all the positions that he'd be eligible for. Now, that's the beauty of these Gladiator Leagues, is especially when you get to the end of the draft, you can see where everybody else is at. Oh, all right. He doesn't have
to go.
And he only has an outfielder. He can only draft an outfielder because you have to have a legal lineup throughout. And it doesn't matter if you think they're going to get outfield eligibility come April or May, because you have to be able to start a legal lineup on the first day of the season. So it's an interesting strategy there. So Rodolfo is definitely on my short list to fill my middle infield slot. It is nice in general to see that he has the second base, third base eligibility as well. To be able to, it makes him a really intriguing pick in a draft champions, even if he is on your bench, to be able to put into five different positions throughout the course of the season with injuries and what have you as well. So somebody, yeah, I will be targeting in that format for sure.
Yeah, I think the playing time will definitely be there for him. And I think he'll be at fifth or higher. Roster Resource has him fifth now in the lineup. I think that's as low as he would go. I think they could put Sawinski ahead of him, but I think he's going to be near the top. Makes him very intriguing in draft champions, as you mentioned. And if I'm not mistaken, he was drafted in our On the Wire listener league. So 30 rounds, 12 teams, Fab League. That's an interesting spot as well. As things come along throughout the offseason, you have somebody you could be pretty comfortable with at your middle. And if something else comes up that's better, it wouldn't hurt you too much to let him go even before the season starts. So I think it's a good choice in that situation as well.
Yeah, I drafted him.
Was you? Oh, nice.
Yeah, he is my starting middle infield in that team as well. Again, maybe I'm a little biased because I've already has some exposure to him and I'm looking to get a little bit more. And in this DC, I'm still far enough away from where he would need to be picked. So he could be a 3-for-3 player. I've gone three drafts. There is one player that I already have 100% exposure to in all three drafts. Can you guess who that is? The only hint I'll give you, it is not a late round pick because I have not gone past round 17 in this DC yet.
I saw you tweet about this, I believe, and I forget who it was. So it's not even cheating. I should know this because I saw
it. It's very rare to see this happen, I think. And so
is it a catcher?
No, it's my draft. Top drafted player so far is Mookie Betts in the first round. Wow. And it's just because I've either had the eighth or ninth pick in all three of these drafts. And he just sits there and I'm like, all right, I guess I'm heavily invested in how Mookie Betts does going into the 2023 season.
I'm in the same spot. I've been for slow drafts. I purposely set my KDS from the middle out because I like to typically have a queue ready to go and go on auto a few picks before my turn each round. And that's harder to do when you're on the ends, not knowing who you're going to get to have the next one on auto as well. So I've been working from the inside out, and other than Britton Allen snagging him from me at the draft I did in Arizona, I've been snagging Bo Bichette there in the middle of the first.
Yeah, I noticed that. Yeah. I've done. Yeah. Two drafts I've done with you so far. Bo Bichette has gone off the board there. I just feel like it is rare to see, like, when you talk about overexposure of players, it's usually the guys toward the end. Like, I'm reaching for somebody in the 20th round more often than not, than everybody else or what have you. And in the first couple of rounds of a draft, of course, you want to be able to diversify a little bit more in case something terrible happens to any one of those players. So I've lived or died by Mookie Betts.
We have to do a lot more drafts so that we get that diversification. Like, it's not a choice. We have to do a lot more drafts so that we get diversified.
That's how it works. That's how it works. All right. I think those are some decent trades that we talked about, and they have some implications for their teams, both the teams that they're leaving and the teams that they are joining. So let's get into the crux of the episode as we talk about the free agent pitching market. We talked about some hitters with Sean Roberts last week. We have a very special guest joining us to talk about the free agent pitchers as well. And we'll get to that right after this quick break. All right, we are back, and you are still listening to On the Wire. I am Adam Howe, joined, as always, by Kevin Hastings. And now that we're back from the break, we're lucky enough to have with us a very special guest, Paul Spohr, editor and contributor over at Rotographs, as well as a longstanding co-host of Sleeper and the Bus podcast. Paul can also be found streaming regularly on the Twitch, where he's been playing a whole bunch of out-of-the-park baseball seasons, some really interesting ones that I've seen you post on, Paul, especially the basically switching players on different teams, the MVPs and stuff like that. We're going to talk to Paul about his early starting pitching rankings and where some of the free agent names land on it currently and how their signings can sway their value. But before we get into that, Paul, thanks for taking the time to be here. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you guys so much for having me on. I appreciate that intro.
Yeah, you have a new role. I didn't put this on the rundown, but I'm curious about it. You have a new role with Out of the Park, if I'm not mistaken. What are you doing with them?
I am the content director for their game called Perfect Team, which is a card collecting mode where you build your team through with cards across the baseball landscape. Build the best team you can, and I'm going to be helping really direct that content. They've got a great team in place there, so I'm coming in and helping out. I'm not building it from the ground up or anything like that, but it's a cool title, content designer for that, and I'm really excited because Out of the Park it's an amazing game. If you're a baseball fan, sports nerd, it's a simulator. You don't play. You don't have to be a video game savvy person who gets on the controller. It's all computer-based sim. But it's amazing. It's the deepest game there is. If you like the idea of being a GM, running a team, which fantasy players do, then you pretty much would love Out of the Park Baseball.
Yeah, it's cool to just be able to. I know you've been doing a lot of stuff with Out of the Park for quite some time, so it's got to be a good feeling to actually be involved like directly or in an official capacity in the product that you're actually utilizing on a regular basis.
Yeah, it's really fortunate to have that happen now for the second game. I did it with MLB The Show as well. Played that game a bunch. Got to do some things with them. So to have these two games, my two favorite video games, both baseball related, and be able to work with them in the capacity that I have has been really fortunate.
Yeah, that's cool. All right. We're going to talk a little bit about the free agent pitching landscape. We're going to stick with starters. We're not going to go into the reliever market. For more information on that, you guys can listen to In the Pen. I think that they got an episode coming out on Friday. And so they will talk strictly about the reliever market and relievers in general. So a lot of information to get through there. We're not going to take up any more of the time talking about that here. So first and foremost, Paul, you're like our own Nick Pollock and a couple other people, Justin Mason, a couple other people do have some very early rankings. At least you have them for yourself, whether or not I haven't seen them published on Fangraphs yet, but I know that you talk about them on Sleeper in the Bus. You may make them available on the Sleeper in the Bus Patreon, if I'm not mistaken. But talk to me about how do you rank the free agent pitchers in your rankings, as far as what kind of variables you take into place? Are you putting them in a neutral ballpark when you're making these rankings? Are you just doing it straight on skill and then you make adjustments when they sign? Talk to me a little bit about your process there.
Yeah, so when guys are free agents, I think the general rule of thumb for me is knock them down a little bit, right? You don't really know where they're going to go, but I'm not gonna go too far with that, especially on the high end. I'm not moving DeGrom and Verlander way down my list because I don't know where they're going to go. There's not really anything that could happen that would really take me off of them or bring them way down. Neither of them are going to Colorado, I don't think. Obviously, that's our biggest fear. And there are other hitter-friendly parks around the league, but nothing that, again, that's really going to move the needle. So with the upper end, I'm not changing too much, even with kind of the mid-tier. The guys who are more fringe, that if they sign somewhere friendly, you would really move them up. If they are in a hitter's park like Cincinnati or Colorado, you're running away from them. Those guys do get hit. Those are guys that maybe I'm not drafting in early drafts unless they are coming at a discount. And so I'm going to be a bit lower on some guys like that. You look at this, the tiers as you've broken them down, that Syndergaard, Quintana, Waka, Eflin, Smiley, et cetera. There's another 5, 6, 7 guys there. That group is very dependent on where they land. In fact, a few guys in the tier above them are as well. I would need to know where Manaea, Taiwan Walker, Ross Stripling, guys like that are going. So going to be a little bit lower on those guys until they sign. And then as they get situated, we'll figure out where we're going to put them. But the upper tiers, not much is changing. DeGrom, Verlander, Rodon, nothing that they can do is going to gravely negatively impact them as far as their rankings.
Yeah, I would venture to guess, and we'll talk about this a little bit later when we get into the specific players, but especially on that top tier, the only thing in my mind that can really sway is if they, and they end up signing, if Justin Verlander ends up going back, sorry, back to Detroit, and you're chasing wins, maybe that kind of, that category takes a hit as opposed to staying in Houston. But yet you're at the talent level of these guys, they're going to get the strikeouts. They're going to, their ratios are going to, unless they go to Cincinnati or Colorado or whatever, like you said, which is not an option, not something that I'm really considering as well. Kevin, where do you think that as these guys sign, what kind of impact do you think it has on their ADP as drafts continue to go? Do you have a feeling that some of these players are being underdrafted solely because of the unknown? And is it time to take advantage of that, of those in certain situations?
Similarly to what Paul said about how he ranks them, I think that the higher end guys will have more overreaction and it shouldn't really matter. So these are guys that I like to try to grab now if I'm interested in them. The later guys is where it gets really interesting because, as Paul brought up, or you brought up actually, the wins, right? I say it all the time. We can't chase wins, but we have to. This is a subject that was brought up in Arizona by Rob Silver. And I think the way he phrased it was, we have to try. We've always said you can't chase wins, but now in today's formats and the way pitchers are used, we have to pay attention to this. And the better team, the better offensive lineup, the better defense behind the pitcher can really affect, especially the later guys. Not as worried about it with the top tier guys as both you and Paul mentioned.
Paul, you're making adjustments on the fly to your rankings. At least when you're talking to Justin Sleeper on the bus, you guys are talking back and forth and you both have made adjustments, at least verbally. Have you made adjustments based on the small amount of signings that we've already seen? So like Tyler Anderson moving from LA to LA.
And I cost him a few spots, though. Yeah. I like him with the Dodgers. I think that's a situation where I don't think Tyler Anderson's going to forget everything that he learned and fall apart there. But between the two organizations, where do you want guys? You want guys with the Dodgers over the Angels. So that's going to cost him a few spots, I think. So yeah, small moves like that are certainly happening. And there's a simple fact, Justin and I talk about this phenomenon. You can be looking at your rankings and obviously no games are happening and you're still moving guys around.
Yeah, right.
And some people will be like, what's happening? What are you moving them off of if there's no games? Listen, when I put out a rank of 150 pitchers the way I did on October 11th, I didn't do 150 deep dives. I have no problem admitting that is just a stone cold truth. And that's pretty much always the case for people, unless it's like their final ranking of the year, or one of their big offseason rankings where they have done all the deep dive. But right after the season there, I'm putting out my first list. I did go through a bunch of guys, but I haven't deep dived on everybody. So as you're going through and you're reviewing things and looking up different guys, you're moving stuff around all the time. So moves are impacting it, but also gaining more knowledge about the season that just happened are moving guys as well. That's the way I see things when I'm looking at the pitcher rankings right now. So it's not just the moves, but it's also, hey, I finally got time to really dive into Tyler Wells and I like him more, so he's up 5, or I don't like him as much, so he's down 8. Obviously, that's just a random example. I have not moved Tyler Wells based on anything yet for those Tyler Wells fans.
I will cross that on my notes that I'm making here.
Don't worry. Tyler Wells has been unmoved right now.
For good or bad, that's
neutral right now. Yeah.
I always find it interesting too. And then we talk about this a lot last year with Clayton Kershaw, where Kevin, I think you and I basically said, I'm interested in Clayton Kershaw if the Dodgers re-sign him. If he goes anywhere else, I heard other people say that, I'm not. And he re-signed again with the Dodgers as well. Martin Perez, he took the qualifying offer, only one of two, him and Jock Peterson, the only qualifying offers to be accepted this year. We'll use this as a segue into talking about specific players, and we're gonna go into kind of what I tiered out all the free agents that are being drafted in the draft champions. And I want to clarify this again very specifically: the ADPs that I put up on these tiers are only draft champions. And I think it's really important for anybody out there that's looking at ADP on the NFBC system to filter your ADP, because there are a lot of different drafts that are happening right now. There are best balls. I don't think any completed yet, but there are active. There are cut lines in this new Gladiator League that's out.
Gladiator.
They are screwing ADP left, right, and sideways. And so we want to make sure that we're only looking at ADP that's indicative of the type of draft that you are taking. The tiers are basically based on ADP. I've got your ace tier. I'm taking the low-hanging fruit here, naming him. This is just a poker reference. So you've got your ace tier of Jacob deGrom, Justin Verlander, Carlos Rodon. They're all going within the top 25 of starting pitchers. And I did filter out manually.
I know. I have to take out the relievers.
The relievers. So frustrating. DeGrom, the ninth starter. Verlander's the 14th starter. And Rodon is the 15th starter off the board. My question, though, is, and you guys both touched on this, that these guys, location doesn't really matter unless you're chasing wins here. But do you think, Paul, I'm going to start with you. Does a contract matter? I talked about this with Martin Perez. He took the qualifying offer. We were happy that Kershaw re-signed with the Dodgers and not tried to go another team. Does the type of contract for these guys matter as far as if they get a short-term deal with a lot of money because the teams aren't willing to keep them long-term for whether it's health reasons, age reasons, whatever, or if they take a long-term deal with more guaranteed money? How do you look at that, Paul, as far as when they make that contract signing, what does that do for your rankings?
There's certainly aspects of that can play a role. In fact, with a guy who's on the free agent market this year, we saw that impact play out with Carlos Rodon. When the White Sox moved on from him, there was a distinct downturn in his value in the market. Again, I'm a sicko. I do drafts all year round. So I'm following that early market right out of the regular season there. And Rodon's going at a bit of a discount relative to how good he was. Remember, he had an ace turn in 2021 as well. And they're thinking, if the White Sox can't trust him, then maybe we shouldn't be trusting him. He was moving down the board a little bit. Nothing too significant. I'm not saying he was like cheap. He was just cheaper. Then San Francisco, of all teams, signs him. And they basically, the deal they gave him was a co-sign on his health, according to a lot of people. They felt comfortable. Okay, they're going to give him 21.5 mil. And I believe he had an option for this year that he opted out of.
He opted out this year, yeah.
So there was a two-year deal. There's a two-year commitment on San Francisco's end if Rodon wanted to be part of it. First year was 22 mil. That gave people a lot of confidence, and Rodon moved back up. There are things like that in signings that can happen that will have an impact. You got a super injured guy that gets a 3-4 year deal maybe. Okay, that is at least a little bit. Again, you're not moving Rodon from, say, 25 to 4 in your starting rankings based off of that. But if you like him and you're like, okay, I like him, but I'm nervous about the health again. I don't think we should be going any more than normal. We shouldn't be worried about Rodon's health. He just had a healthy full season. He's got standard risk. If you sign like a 1 year, though, I wonder if that would raise the antenna again. Wait a minute. He did have this healthy, full, excellent season. It's back-to-back great seasons, and he only got a 1 year this time? Maybe that would give people some pause. Or he gets a 4 year deal. Someone really buys in on Rodon. That might add some confidence there. These are moves on the margins, but all this sort of stuff plays a role. For me, with Rodon, I'm actually really high on him, and I'm not into necessarily, in my opinion, overvaluing pitcher injury risk. The point is that everyone has injury risk. It's not that Carlos Rodon doesn't have injury risk. He absolutely does, and he's been more injured in the past, which means there is a little bit extra. But instead of putting his risk up here and everyone else's down here, I'm closer to where they're not that far apart. And obviously, folks can't see the video, but I'm moving my hands.
You're gonna love that.
There's a big split to a minor split. Every pitcher is one pitch away. The idea of a healthy starting pitcher is a myth. Mm-hmm. It's just a myth. So sure, there will be certain outliers that we look back and like, that guy was a workhorse. But you're only a workhorse until you're not. I know that's a little trite and cliche, but it's the truth. Go back and look at guys when they, like Lance Lynn, he was workhorse as can be with St. Louis. Then he got hurt, missed 2018, came back. He's been pretty workhorse-esque for a little while there, but now these last 2 years, and he is in his mid-30s, so I'm not roasting. I'm just saying players, the pitchers evolve with how much of a workhorse they are. Put everyone's talent or injury risk at a pretty similarly high level. I would not make grave moves based on injury risk.
Yeah, the other variable with these guys as well, especially two out of these three, Grom and Rodon, both got the qualifying offer, both declined it, obviously. For me, to see them decline the qualifying offer, I think it's like $19.7 million, to almost $20 million. That gives me more confidence in them as well, them knowing, hey, I'm in a good place. I'm gonna go ahead and test the market because I'm pretty sure I can get something either longer or for more money, mm-hmm. which means I've got a little bit more trust in them at the moment as well.
I wonder how the draft pick is going to hang around Eovaldi's neck. I'm an Eovaldi guy, been rooting for this guy since he was a Dodger. And he's a great one to talk about with the injury risk. Yes, there's heightened risk for him, again, relative to normal. But I do think it can be outsized for people like, oh, I'm putting him 12, 15 rankings down because of his injury risk. But then there's this healthy guy over here, quote unquote, mm-hmm. who I'm going to rank higher. That's the kind of difference I'm trying to mitigate. But I do worry. I'm surprised he didn't take it, to be honest. Given his health track record, I thought Eovaldi had a good shot to take the 20 mil at 19.7, like you said, at age 33. Looks like he's trying to get his last multi-year. I don't blame him, but I hope he has knowledge that it's out there somewhere. Tyler Anderson, when he declined it, I would have said, oh my God, that was so stupid. But the news of him signing with the Angels came out right away we didn't have time to react to that. And he knew he had a multi in hand. That's the only way Tyler Anderson declines that qualifying offer is if he has a multi in hand that is pretty good value. And it was. The Angels paid him pretty nicely for what he did. There is also the fact that like Eovaldi could last out there a little bit because of that draft pick and his long-term health track record. And again, I know I'm sitting here saying be careful overrating track health record, but teams are going to look at that and they're going to be like, you cost us a draft pick and you might only pitch 80 innings. I don't know. So I'm eager to see what happens with Eovaldi. I don't know if he's going to get what he wants there.
The Angels are the one team that don't seem to care about losing the draft pick after they signed Syndergaard on the QO, Tyler Anderson. Who knows? The Angels could maybe be the team that signed Eovaldi.
Yeah, because the picks start to go down, right?
They go down.
The more you sign. So if he only costs them like a fifth rounder or something, then maybe there is something to that where it makes sense for them to stack because they're having a pretty aggressive offseason so far. And I consider myself, and I think everyone whose team isn't in direct competition with them. If you're a fan of an AL West team, you don't have to like the Angels. But if you're a fan of any other team, any other division, you should also be a bit of an Angels fan because you should want Trout and Ohtani in
October.
You just
want what's best for baseball.
Yeah. Exactly. So I got my finger on the pulse of the Angels. I'm a Tigers fan through and through, but I'm always looking at what the Angels are doing because I want those guys in October so badly. So it might get to a point where them signing Eovaldi does make more sense because it's not going to cost them as much. And they can always use pitching, and it, even at 110 innings, he could be helpful to them. So that's a good call out there. Some teams don't care, and they will just take on multiples to lower the draft pick.
What's the new stat? I think Jared Kelenic has more hits in the postseason than Mike Trout does now.
Oh, that's so gross.
All right, let's split the difference. Paul jumped over to Nathan Eovaldi, who is in the Queen tier. Kevin, in the solo pitcher in what I call the king tier, pitchers that are going between the 25th and 49th starting pitcher off the board is Chris Bassitt. He also got the qualifying offer, declined it. He's going at ADP 160, the 46th starting pitcher off the board. We talk about with the ace tier, it doesn't really matter where they go. I feel like we're starting to already get to the point with Bassitt. It might matter where he goes. Where are you afraid he will sign? And is it enough fear to keep you? Is it a logical enough place that it keeps you from signing, drafting him, or have you drafted him already?
I have not drafted him yet. I'm not opposed to it. He's almost with the, as you mentioned, he's almost with that ace tier. It's just getting close. I think the qualifying offer here might help in this situation. I don't know that a team that's not going to be in contention will give up that draft pick. And he was great in Oakland, good then with the Mets as well. I kind of adding him to that ace tier, of course, being below them slightly, but I kind of read it the same way. Of course, he's not going to Colorado. Free agent pitchers don't sign in Colorado.
Not at this
time. Yeah.
Cincinnati, of course, would give us a little bit of concern, but we've seen some guys put up nice numbers in Cincinnati mm-hmm. in recent years. Yeah, I don't think that it's going to bother me too much where he goes. Defense would probably matter a little more to me than ballpark in this situation, but he's leaving the Mets. So their defense got better, but for a couple of years, that was the knock on them. Especially, we heard about that a lot when Stroman first went there. Yeah, don't think I'm too worried about it with Bassett.
With this qualifying offer, and we're coming back to this a lot, I do wonder, especially with Bassett and Eovaldi specifically, we touched on this a little earlier, but do you think, Paul, do you think that this actually forces teams to look, if they're going to sign a guy like Eovaldi or Bassett and they're going to lose a draft pick and you're not the Angels, does it give them more of a opportunity to sign them to a longer term deal? Because if you're losing a draft pick, you want to make sure you're getting a long term commitment.
No doubt. You're not trying to do a 1 year on somebody like that. Yeah, I think teams do factor that in. It's like, it costs us a draft pick for only 1 year of this guy. I don't think we want to do that. We want to go two or three. And I think Bassett's at an elevated age too. I believe he's going into his age 33 season, but he's been good for a while now. If you have not had Chris Bassett on your fantasy team, or you're not super involved with following his stats, go look at his page. Since coming back from injury in 2017, he didn't throw much in 2018, but it was a good 47 and two thirds. But from 18 on, Bassett's been an absolute stud. 3.29 ERA, 1.14 WHIP in 593 and two thirds innings over that time. So he's going into his age 34 season a little bit elevated, but I think he could get a 3 year deal because of how great he's been and the draft pick being tied to him. He looks like he's somebody who can, he withstood the rigors of 30 starts this past year, 27 the year before that. Remember, he got hit in the face in 21. By a comebacker. So he probably would have had back-to-back 30-plus start seasons without that unfortunate accident. Of course, 2020, he didn't have a chance to throw a quote-unquote full season. And then he made 28 appearances in 2019, 25 starts. So he hasn't been like a workhorse, but he's gotten through three full seasons pretty well as a quality pitcher. I think the performance and the draft pick three-year deal could come for Chris Bassett, and I wouldn't be that surprised. He's very good. I think a team will trust him.
All right, let's move. I'm going to fill out the rest of this queen tier. After Nathan Eovaldi comes, who is going at as the 68th starting pitcher off the board, we got Andrew Heaney, Jameson Taillon, Kodai Senga, Taiwan Walker, Mike Clevenger, Sean Manaea, and Ross Stripling going as the 98th starting pitcher off the board. I took some liberties from this point on who was a starter and who was a reliever. Don't hold me to these specifically. But Kevin, let's start with Senga first then. Is there a team that we talked about him and the rest of the guys coming over from Japan a couple episodes ago, but is there a team that you're hoping signs him to in his first year to get the most out of him?
Kansas City Royals. No, just kidding. That's not going to happen. No, I know we've heard about talk Boston, Seattle, San Diego. Any of these spots would be great for me. The thing about Senga is once he signs and then the overreaction is really going to begin. And I really think it will be a spot we like. He's a 100% free agent as far as this goes. So he can pick where he wants to go, anywhere he wants to go. We'll be interested in signing him. It'll just be a matter of working out the money. So if you believe that Senga is going to perform as the 79th starting pitcher in fantasy baseball or better, you probably need to grab him right now. His ADP is going to go up regardless of where he signs, which makes this kind of interesting. I don't think it matters, and because it will be a good team with a good lineup. So yeah, Senga, somebody that if you're interested, now's the time to grab him, I believe.
Yeah, that's probably fair with all these guys. Once they sign, you see it all the time. And anybody coming over from Japan or Korea, as soon as they sign, that's when it goes up. And we talked about this a couple episodes ago as well. The other guy I want to focus on here is Mike Clevenger. Paul, he didn't look good. In 2022, he turns 32 next month. Is he in a situation where he can still afford to take a 1 year prove it offer from somebody and then try to get that long term?
Yeah, I don't know that he's going to get much more than that at this point, because talk about health, and he simply hasn't had it since his 2018 full season. Through 21 starts the next year in 2019. And that's been a max since then. 20, of course, didn't have a chance. 21 didn't pitch at all. And this year, 114 innings in 22 starts and one relief appearance for Clevenger with pretty underwhelming performance and at times looking really bad. So I'm not sure that he's going to get a multi-year deal at age 32. I think he might only get the one-year prove-its, and he might try to find the best team that he can do that with and hopefully reestablish himself. But the injuries are piling up with him. And so, again, I want to go back to that point I was making earlier about injury risk. I don't ignore somebody like his injury risk and just say, no, he has the same as everyone. And that's not my point earlier, by the way, too. I want to be clear. I'm not saying everyone has the exact same injury risk, but overstating his injury risk compared to a healthy guy is where I would jump in. He does have elevated risk, though. You want to be careful with Clevinger because his health continues to fail him. I don't know, a one-year make right somewhere, but who's going to do that? Which of the top is a top team going to do that? Or is he going to get stuck somewhere like Cincinnati or like a lesser team where the wins are going to be compromised? And then if it were Cincinnati, the park would be a problem as well. I don't know. I have no real interest in Clevinger.
That's my biggest fear. If he's going to get that one-year deal, prove it offer, it's going to be with a Pittsburgh or a team that has the spare parts or the spare space to give him that opportunity to do that. And then maybe he becomes a trade piece in July as well. So obviously, as we talk about chasing wins, that in that situation, even if he goes long enough into games to qualify for a win, those are probably going to be far and few between. I think that wherever he goes, if he goes to a team that has just a mediocre to less than average bullpen, you can put that to the put those wins as bonus. Anytime he gets one, it's probably going to be a bonus based on where he's going to go. All right, we got a pretty big tier after this, the Jack tier. These are starting pitchers that are currently going 100 through 200 off the board. We have the aforementioned Noah Syndergaard, Jose Quintana, Michael Wacha, Zach Eflin, Drew Smyly, Corey Kluber, Michael Lorenzen, Johnny Cueto, Matthew Boyd, Jordan Lyles, Kyle Gibson, Wade Miley. Paul, I'm going to start here. First, are any of these guys actually which of these guys in a most positive or negative direction are have a bigger differential from your rankings to where they're going on these ADP list?
Man, I like a couple of these guys. You can talk about the whole Jack tier, right? Kluber, you talk about health with him. I think he's still shown that he can be good. The problem with him, so with Kluber, I like him, but he's always had a bad fastball. Remember, even at his peak, his fastball wasn't particularly good. And now I think that margin for error is even thinner. And so when he's off, he's really off. So he had a lot of good starts this year. By the way, he took 31 turns at age 36. Problem is, the bad starts are really bad. He had four starts of 5+ earned runs, including an 8 and a 7. And so he ended up with a mid-4s ERA. And that's the problem with an older guy like this who can have flashes. He's probably best used as a streamer, but he can get you when you least expect it. You know who I'm really intrigued by is Eflin. He turned down, did he get a qualifying offer or was he offered something else? He turned down, no, he had an option. He had an option that he turned down, which I thought, wasn't it like 15 mil?
It wasn't, I thought it was like a dual option as well. It's one of those very rare.
It was a dual option, mutual. That's right. And he turned down his end of it, which kind of surprised me because he ended the season relieving. Is he going to go back to starting? I thought maybe he'd found something here in the bullpen, but I guess if he's going to try to go back to starting, maybe that 15 mil isn't as appealing. I'm intrigued by him. He's got good stuff. I think if he goes to a team that is good at maybe extracting a little bit extra out of their pitchers, I could be intrigued by a Zach Eflin. You have a lot of interesting guys here whose health has been a problem for them and that when they're healthy, they are pretty good. Drew Smyly, the aforementioned Kluber, Michael Wacha. He's always got that great changeup. We saw a good season out of Johnny Cueto. Nobody's really paying for that, by the way, which is so if you liked it and you believe in the season, you can buy back in on him. Michael Lorenzen's a guy I keep being a sucker for. I just want some health for him. Quintana and Cueto were probably two of the biggest returns to prominence from a couple guys. I think both of them could be pretty good again this year, and neither of them are particularly expensive either. Thor, I've been a Thor fan in the past, but he doesn't even deserve the nickname anymore because he does not have Thor's hammer. My man,
he is not worthy. No,
he cannot strike any of the three of us out. So pretty out on him. And I think I don't have him higher. I don't have him lower than the 107th starter because you were asking me in comparison to my rankings, but I'm very disinterested in Thor at this point. And so this is a departure from previous years where I've been a big Thor backer. I just think it's kind of over with Thor as a premier pitcher in the league. So I have 98th, and you say he's going off 107. So I'm a little bit higher than the market, I guess, but I see myself skipping him in drafts. So I think I might have to lower him if that's the case.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point to make. Basically, if you're looking at pitcher rankings, whether they're Paul's or Nick's or anybody's, just because a guy is ranked at a certain point doesn't mean you're taking him at that point. You have to really consider who you've already taken, what roster you've already built, and what roster you think you can continue to build later on. So just because somebody is there, or if you're up 10 spots on him compared to where he's going in ADP, doesn't necessarily mean that you have to take him there. Kevin, is there anybody on this list that you're willing to take above their current ADP, whether it's the starting pitcher ADP or just the overall?
Jose Quintana sticks out to me here. This entire group is where the team context really comes into play for me. These are guys that, depending on the team, how deep are they going to be allowed to pitch into games, right? I don't want to see one of these guys sign in Minnesota that seems to have embraced
five and dime.
No third time through the order type thing. I know the Marlins don't need any starting pitching, but that would be a great landing spot, that type of team. San Francisco, I would like to see, as much as they are into the analytics, it seems that their starting pitchers are allowed to go five or six innings. So that's what I'm watching here. But this is the range of pitchers that in Fab League drafting right now, load up on these guys. You can change them out before the season even starts if need be.
That's a good point, especially if you're like us and you've done Fab Leagues already in November, which seems like crazy person talk, as Paul mentioned, just drafting in general all season long, but do Fab Leagues as well. And then you can make some more of these risky picks and not worry about it so much come March or April. All right, I'm going to miss these two last tiers, the Joker tier and then the how to play poker card tier. These guys have not been drafted at all. So you've got the first group. They've been drafted, but they have not been drafted in all 24 of the draft champions that have completed so far. We have Zach Greinke, Dylan Bundy, Rich Hill, Zach Davies, Trevor Williams, Michael Pineda, Danny Duffy, Chris Archer, Vince Velasquez, and Drew Hutchinson have each been drafted one time by one lucky drafter. And then you still have Mike Minor, Kohei Arihara, Chichi Gonzalez, Dallas Keuchel, Aaron Sanchez and Annabelle Sanchez, Joe Ross, Chad Gould are technically all free agents. They have not signed yet, and they have also not been drafted yet, probably for good reason. But most of these guys, especially in the Joker tier who have been drafted, they've actually done more harm than good for fantasy rosters, at least in 2022. It does show with the inconsistent drafting so far in these 50 rounders. Assuming that every single one of them sign in a very favorable situation, Paul, which two of these do you have the most confidence that they can actually bounce back and be beneficial to in a draft and hold?
I'll take Danny Duffy. Again, if we're going to make-believe world of hell, I still like the talent. So give me Danny Duffy. And Chris Archer was really just a four-inning guy last year. I'm not sure that he's going to expand beyond that. God, this is a rough list. I guess Greinke's innings. Greinke was pretty good this year, right? Like, all things considered, again, you talk about a guy who couldn't strike us out here on the call, but 3.68 ERA, 1.34 WHIP is still pretty bad, but yeah, decent enough ERA. But you're making me pick two, so I'm gonna go Duffy and Greinke, former teammates there. And one guy who could get a bunch of strikeouts if everything's going well, and another guy who might just eat up some innings, smash them together, and they could be decent on a deep format.
Yeah. Duffy's the one I'd be worried about finding his way back into a bullpen.
Absolutely.
Or we always wish it. I feel like it never happens. But if they can find a position, they can go to a team that is willing to give them an opener, and then they can go the four innings after that. Great. Ideal.
I mean, pick two of these guys. Let Vince Velasquez and Danny Duffy be six innings combined.
Partner,
three
sure.
apiece. Righty and a lefty. Velasquez is a guy I fell for years. Just like with his arm talent, thinking, oh my God, he could become something. And he had some flashes early, like back in 16-17 with Philly, but it's never come together. But yeah, I think I could see both of them being shortened, especially Duffy. I could see a bullpen role or like a 2-3 inning role that might serve him best, but obviously it wouldn't be best for fantasy.
Sure. Kevin, is there anybody on this list that you can see from here on out the rest of the way actually being drafted 100%? Like I said, these guys have all not been drafted in the first 24, but can you see any of them actually being drafted 100%? Let's just say they all sign right now. They're all signed in the U.S. None of them are going to Korea. None of them are going to Japan, which is the other fear here with some of these guys. Which one do you think could be drafted 100% the rest of the way.
Ooh, I guess I got to cheat, and right? Because I got to cheat and go with the guys that have been drafted in the highest percentage of leagues here. Think Greinke will be left out in some leagues just because of the lack of strikeouts. I think it's probably Bundy. I think it's Bundy because if he does go to a team and we do find out he's going to be in a bullpen, that may even raise his perceptive value a little bit. Maybe that's what we want to see. And depending on the team and what their bullpen looks like, we may start seeing some predictions that he could move into a closer role. So I would go with him because he's been the most drafted so far. Yeah, Chris Archer at 1 out of 24, he's not going to be 100% drafted the rest of the way, but he's the one I'm most interested in. How much of that four inning and out was him? How much of it was Minnesota that we just mentioned earlier?
That's fair. He probably wanted to keep going, but they wouldn't let him.
And when healthy, he's good. And he got shut down in mid-September with a tight pectoral. Hopefully that's all cleared up and we can see what he's doing in spring training wherever he lands. But he's the one I'm most interested in keeping an eye on. But Bundy probably will be drafted the most the rest of the way, I would think.
Alex Fast talked about this on The Corner, so I'm not really spoiling anything from First Pitch, but he did a presentation at First Pitch. I wasn't there, but I heard enough about it, about consistent pitchers, and the most consistent pitcher in baseball last year was Chris Archer. He was consistently the worst pitcher in baseball from the time. So that's something to be said is there as well, whether that was Minnesota or if it was just Archer being naturally bad, at least in 2022. He'd have to find a really, really good spot to bring him back along to where he once was as a prospect, really. Is there anybody here, Paul, this would be the last question here. Is there anybody in these last two tiers that you're the most afraid doesn't? I know I drafted at least two guys last year that did not play an inning, whether it was Kyle Seager in early drafts before he retired or DJ Peters before he went overseas. So I got that zero. Is there anybody here that you think has the best shot of not pitching a single pitch in the major leagues and you'd just be avoiding for that fear alone?
Among guys that I'd actually draft, Joey Arihara could go back over, either Sanchez could retire, but amongst guys that I might actually throw a dart on in the 40s rounds is Chad Kuhl. Like, I could see him maybe getting an offer from overseas and he figures it out there. Cause like, he's shown some flashes in the majors with Pittsburgh and even with Colorado earlier this year, but Colorado, as it always does, the park eventually gets you. I could see like taking him in the 47th round and then boom, he signs in the KBO to a 3-year deal or something and tries to figure himself out there. Cause he might be a guy that would benefit from going over there, figuring some things out and then coming back. Cause we've seen that with guys that come back different and better. Miles Michaelis, one of the more recent ones, Nick Martinez, Colby Lewis going way back, and several others too. But Chad Kuhl, among the ones I would actually even consider, cause most of that group I wouldn't really consider, but I could see taking Kuhl and then finding out that he's going overseas to be better there. Cause if you're a mediocre major leaguer or a little bit below, you can be a star overseas. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Huge in Japan. That's the longstanding phrase. That's the Uncle Jesse in all of us. And so, Kevin, is there anybody else on this list that you'd be afraid of either signing overseas or in Greinke's case, he says he's not retiring, just retiring?
It's not official yet, but I think Greinke will come back as a Royal. I don't think he's going to retire. Joe Ross, he didn't have his Tommy John surgery till the end of May, and he's battled injuries prior in his career. So it'll be a while before we see him, I think, if we see him at all in 2022.
Yeah, that's all probably fair to fear pretty much everybody in these last two tiers. As Kevin and I have talked about, like more than likely more interested in taking some high end relievers or multi-inning relievers in the last 10 rounds of a draft is if I'm looking for more pitching depth than a lot of these guys on this list. But it's still going to be interesting to see where they end up signing and if their new teams can actually get anything more out of them. There's always that perfect scenario where the guy comes out of nowhere just because they found the new pitching coach that has found something different that nobody else has found out of them. It's rare, but it happens.
It can happen.
Yeah, it can happen. All right. With all that in mind, all these free agents to consider as you're changing rankings, Kevin, is there any other words of wisdom that you can impart onto our listeners as they are considering these guys throughout the course of their early drafts?
Just keep an eye on things. It, like Paul said, things are going to change, and it's not necessarily anything that happens. It's that all of us, including Paul, you, me, Nick, everybody, we're going to start taking deeper dives on players as things go along, and we're going to notice things and make adjustments. And just like we talk with hitters, I caution people to don't just say, I'm moving him up 10 spots. Have a good reason. Plug numbers in and see how that does affect their auction calculator values and make your adjustments from there. Don't just assume a couple more wins is going to increase a pitcher's value by a certain amount. Check it out. See how it ends up.
That's all fair points. That's going to do it for us today. Episode 88 of On the Wire. Paul, thank you, man, for taking the last second invite. I'm glad you could find the time and join us to talk about some of these free agent pitchers. Can you remind everybody you took the week off from Sleeper in the Bus. Is there anything else that you're working on after the break?
Pod will be back. I'll have another set of SP rankings, I believe, out pretty soon. We're doing something with our group. So I said rankings were coming in November. That might be a December thing. I got to figure out exactly what we're coordinating with our group. But follow me at Fangraphs, fantasy.fangraphs.com, on Twitter at Sporer, S-P-O-R-E-R, and on Twitch at Sporer. I'll be on during the holidays if you want to come hang out. Even if you never played out of the park baseball, just come hang out if you want to talk some baseball, because we got plenty of non-video game fans in there that are just hanging out because we're talking baseball all the time.
I mean, what can you ask? You can't ask for much more than that. Find any place that you can that just all they want to do is talk about baseball, and you'll be in a good spot. So make sure you're joining Paul over there on Twitch and everywhere else. That's going to do it for episode 88 of On the Wire. We'll be back every Sunday. Actually, this episode's going on Thursday, so I'm backtracking myself on that one. But make sure that you are subscribing to the podcast so you get them no matter when they come out. You can follow myself on the Twitter at 80 grade. That's all spelled out. Kevin is at Hastings Kevin. Of course, follow the pod itself at On the Wire Pod. So once again, thank our guest Paul Spore for joining us. You should be followed on the Twitter for now at Spore. And you can find a link to that if you're not actually already following him in our show description. After all that, I am Adam Howe, and on behalf of Kevin Hastings, thanks for listening. We bid you goodbye.